back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with me is my co-host Ray.
Hello.
And back from an extended absence, Jim Vessel's with us again.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Glad to have you back. Missed you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back talking 40K.
Hey, so you know, didn't miss much while you were gone, so that'll be kind of a short show tonight. But yeah, the Triumvirate's back, and we do have a ton to talk about. We've got breaking news from earlier this evening, and I asked a couple of you guys to put some posts and ask some questions. So let's start with Las Vegas Open 2022. Never too early to talk about the future. It has been teased and reminded all throughout the weekend that this would have been the last weekend at Bally's Casino. And they have announced their new location, which sounds really, I don't know, looking at the map, they're going across the street. So if you remember, the very first LVO was at Caesar's Palace. The Bally's Casino is, if you head down what's the name of that street there? Looks like just head down the street towards Bally's and then just past Paris. Well, if you're going to go the opposite direction, you're going to be at the Rio All Suite Hotel and Casino. So if you haven't heard of that, no surprise, it's not one of the bigger name casinos, but some of the key things that they'll be talking about is it has the suite style hotel rooms, which is great for those of us that travel in large groups. And it does have a legitimate esports lounge, which will appease to a lot of gamers. And then last but not least, apparently the convention area is double the size of the previous hall they've had LVO in. So LVO could almost, they said, almost double in size and still fit in the same room. So they're very excited about that. And it also includes a movie screen size TV. So they'll be streaming the top tables there and you'll be able to watch it on the big screen.
Cool.
So I'm excited. I'm not an aficionado of all things Vegas. So I'm literally just looking at a map. So Rio is across the street from Flamingo and Flamingo Palms and not far from Caesars as well as a couple of the other famous ones. But to be honest with you, when it comes to LVO, I just kind of followed the herd when we went out to dinner. So I'm not really sure where I was going. But I'm just glad to have it on the calendar and ready to go for next year.
Yeah, it's cool that they moved it. To be honest, like it's I think I said earlier, like it's not something that I'm too... Like I'm kind of ambivalent about it, I guess. Like I don't go to LVO for like if the rooms are serviceable and the drinks are cheap or fairly manageable. That's and the BCP works. Those are kind of my bar. You know, usually I'm going there to play an event, not to like see this. Like I guess the casino itself, just because you're gonna end up moving a lot, probably is kind of less important to me. But sounds like some people are excited. So yeah, cool.
I'm pretty excited. So I said, good to see it on the part of Vegas. I agree with you, though. At the end of the day, I spend 14 to 16 hours in the same room anyway. So I just want to make sure it's that the best experience possible. And it sounds like that has upgraded quite a bit. So the PCP thing is still, I think the jury's still out on that. And so we'll see what happens. PCP did launch some new products. So let's give them a try this season. But in the meantime, they got a big hurdle to overcome for next year.
Yeah, big monkey on their back.
Yeah, that's a big one. Speaking of other hurdles, COVID has not been kind to the industry as a whole when it comes to hosting events as well as convention buildings and that whole type of business, hospitality industry. So Frontline Gaming has doubled down on this. So they've offered up a value pack, sort of a speed pass type thing, where you buy three tickets to their events at once at a discount price, sort of a pre-buy, and you can choose which three events you want to go to. And that includes the LVO. It also includes the SoCal Open as well as the BAO, which sounds pretty exciting. And they are limiting the number of tickets, so you need to get in quick. So be very interested to see that and see what the interest is for people taking a chance. And they said automatically that if the event is canceled due to COVID, that your money is still safe. You can use it for the next event.
It's a cool product, I guess. But I mean, until things are kind of back to normal, it feels a little bit. FLG is going to do their thing. And I'm glad that like they're able to innovate. But I mean, at the end of the day, their events is such a small percentage of total events. So it's cool, but.
Well, funny you said that, because in terms of number of events, absolutely, they are expanding, but they are definitely swinging for the fences. They're kind of going back to their old model. Back during 5th and 6th edition, they were sort of the TOs for hire, was sort of their kind of old model, and they stopped doing that. So now they are basically only running major events. So we already mentioned a bunch, Las Vegas Open, SoCal, as well as PAO, the one that started Frontline Gaming. They're adding, they said, 5 additional events between now and the end of next year. There will be an event in Louisiana, in New Orleans. There will be another major event in Atlantic City. They said another one, which all they said was in the South. So I'm not sure if that's Atlanta, if that's Alabama. My guess would be Atlanta, probably teaming up with Paul Murphy, seeing that Reese and him are close friends. And Paul's been a longtime TO for quite a number of years. And they're also looking at creating a team event as well, similar to the ATC. So the idea is that, yeah, they may only have a handful of events, but when you average 300 people per event, they could have a larger footprint on the tournament circuit in terms of how much they influence how tournaments are run. What are your thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I mean, I think it's great they're having lots of events, but I mean, again, just kind of going back to this whole LVO thing, the ticket thing, like, I like FLG, but, you know, they're not the only people, like, they are not the community. So I just want to make sure, like, I don't know. I don't know if people have like a weird fetish for them or something like this, but I feel like for me, they're just another group of people that throw events, and that's how I treat them. They shouldn't be treated with any sort of extra special treatment or reverence or anything like that, just because they are. I feel like there's a lot of other events that are, I guess, better. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, cool. More events is better, regardless of who runs them.
Ray, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of feel like they're starting to, I don't know if I want to use the word encroach, but it's getting to the point where it's going to start being like competitive and competing with, you know, other people's events. It's like, yeah, sure, you know, it's great to see, you know, another major pop up, but if it's at the expense of someone who actually is local to the area trying to do their own, that starts becoming problematic, because there's nothing wrong with you wanting to host events, but the moment you're coming in from, you know, the other side of the country and your event's the major at the expense of the local guy, not really the kind of move you should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess it'll be seen what dates their events are, but, you know, I really believe, like, so, you know, a really good example is like BAO last year. There's a local event that we have out in the same weekend, and almost everyone that I know locally went to the local event, because there's actually very few people that travel for events. So I think if you think of the total amount of 40K players, there's very few people that'll say, sorry, let me rephrase, very few people that'll get on a plane and fly upwards of 3 to 6 hours to an event. Sure, lots of people will drive, you know, maybe 2 to 4 hours for an event in state, or maybe the neighboring state if you guys are in the States, or in Canada. But like, I think for the majority of 40K players, like, they go to events in their city, they go to maybe like the next town over, or the next city over, but they're not flying across the country. So as long as they're not putting these like super majors or these kind of big spectacle events on the same weekend as like already established events, I don't really see it as a big deal, like, to have your own local event, because you're still going to get, you know, the people that are going to go to your event. And ultimately, like, if you throw a great event, that needs to be the thing that leads, kind of is your North Star, not trying to compete with FLG, because I think they get a bit of outsized influence on the game, and I personally don't like it.
I think good perspectives from both you guys. As a TO, for me, it's a little bit of both. So, Jim, you're absolutely right. There was 3 years ago, people did travel a lot more. They're willing to get in the car at least and travel 5-6 hours to get their ITC points, especially because there just weren't a lot of GTs. So the idea was, okay, I've maxed out my 3 RTTs. If I'm semi-serious, I need to get my GT. They would travel. So, for example, my event 3 years ago, 64% of the attendees were from out of state. Now, the good news is we're still at that GT level. Bad news is, I think only 10% is from out of state, because now they don't have to travel because there are multiple GTs in multiple locations throughout the local area here. So you're right. And the areas we just described there, okay, New Orleans, I can't remember the last time we talked about an event in Louisiana, period, much less New Orleans. So
I bet you Adam Abramitz has something to do with that. He's been pushing for an event in New Orleans.
Oh, okay. That's good. Probably a good point. So that's actually an influential person right there. So that actually makes sense. As for Atlantic City, actually, it makes sense. But I think to Ray's point, if you're the local guy and you don't want to get pushed out, one of the things I've seen several other tournaments do, and I hope Frontline Gaming kind of embraces this as well, is, oh, you're running your smaller event of 50, 80 people 2 weekends before mine. Tell you what, your winner of your event gets a free ticket to the big event.
Sure. Or use it as a primer event for the larger event.
So, yeah, exactly.
Same rules, run the same rule sets.
I mean, that's what Nova did. I mean, there was like, you could easily do 4 events each month leading up to Nova. And you gave you 4 chances to get a free ticket, but also that event. So you knew what the mission pack was by the time September rolled around and you rolled into DC. And the, you know, Battle Salvation was one of those. The Colonial in New Jersey was one of those. A lot of those events don't run anymore. So the fact that they're running one in Atlantic City might be a kind of a boon. And so, yeah, if it ties into the community, there's a great advantage to this. But if it's a go big or go home type thing, I don't know. I would really question the sustainability of the that kind of tournament circuit. So
well. Yeah, and I guess from my perspective, like the events that are successful will grow and will only continue to grow the hobby. And it's really hard for me to find fault in more Warhammer events around the US, regardless of who runs them, when they are, how many people are they competing, are they not competing. Like at the end of the day, more events the better, as far as I'm concerned. Give people those options. Obviously, you know, like you'd be very hard pressed to find some universe we live in where I say there's too many Warhammer tournaments. Like that's not a universe that I really would live in. Like I can't think I could live in.
Fair enough. So keep your eyes posted for those events as they come up. Of course, you can rely on the Exterminatus podcast here to provide you coverage of those events. So pretty excited about that.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Speaking of events, this past weekend, as we mentioned last week's show, Las Vegas Open was canceled due to COVID, but an interesting charity event was put in its place called the Las Vegas NOPIT. So many of their events were streamed. So the opportunity here was as the top players created lists, and then various Twitch streamers were playing their games live. So it wasn't always the same player playing the same list as they move through the progressions, but we got to see an idea what the top players would have been playing with. And there's some very interesting games. So, gentlemen, you mentioned that you guys saw some of the Twitch streams. What were your thoughts, what you saw?
Go ahead, Ray.
It was interesting. Not always the easiest to follow, I think, because I don't know, it might have just been because I had to watch it in between doing things around the house and popping into work. But I don't know, maybe it was also where I was watching. I didn't catch any of I caught the people that were playing talking, but I didn't really catch anybody popping in to say, hey, if you're just joining us, this is what's going on. So, you know, I jumped in the middle of a game. I didn't know anything about the game except for what people were playing. I didn't know what mission was. I didn't know what the score was. I didn't even know what round it was.
Right. That's interesting because, like, I actually have the opposite issue, which is I think, like, so let me preface by this saying. I've been on Paul Murphy, excellent shoutcaster, big name, big guy in 40K, like, awesome guy. I've been on his podcast, Forge Narrative, multiple times. Awesome member of the community. Adam Camilleri, same thing. Like, man, like, both love both those guys to death. There's a point for me when I'm watching competitive 40K where it's really important, and I think actually much more enjoyable to actually hear the players talk, actually hear the players play the game. And I found that the shoutcasting was a little bit too much. There was too much time spent kind of commentating on what was happening rather than letting the players letting the players' mics go live and having the players talk through the game. And for me, like, the commentators, good commentators can add, just like you mentioned there, Ray, like, they can add the right amount for the audience that's not watching. But, like, you also need, you know, like, you also need to leave some room for the players to kind of talk through their, like, what's happening on their side. And then the commentators should be there to kind of, like, enhance that. And I found with most of the coverage, I actually found myself... they had most of the coverage on the main FLG channel with the commentators. But I found myself switching to the Raw channels. So each of the individual streaming teams, so like Art of War, for instance, or Play on Tabletop, they were streaming on like the Raw footage, essentially, on their own channels with the players. And then if you went to the FLG stream, they had the kind of two commentators kind of giving the play-by-play. And I actually found on almost all games, I enjoyed the Raw stream with the players mic'd way, way more than hearing Adam and Paul kind of give their take, just because it was just too much. There's too much talking, too much like trying to, too much like of their opinions about what's going on or who should do what. Like, at some point, like, I just want to hear the players. I want to hear from the players. Like, I want to hear what's going on in the game. I don't want to hear a opinion desk, right? And that's kind of, that was my one criticism of the coverage, was that it just felt like the stream teams were a little bit too aggressive. And I also don't get this whole obsession with having your face on the stream. Like, when I watch the NHL sports, the color commentators, their faces are not in the corner of my hockey game. So why is it that I have, think about any other sport that you watch, right? Where there's color commentary. Do you ever see the people outside of like commercial breaks where they go to the desk? Do you ever see the faces of the people casting the games? Zero, never. Like, I couldn't even tell you what I've watched Canucks games for 20 years. I couldn't tell you what the faces of the people that actually call the games look like, because you just never see them. So I don't know if it's like a thing with where people want to be like showcase who they are, but I just thought it was just bizarre. Like, let us watch the game and get your, although very beautiful, faces out of my game. So that's my rant.
Wow. It's very interesting because we have, I think all three of us have very different views of what we saw. I do agree, though, about the disembodied head thing. That's pretty funny. I don't remember seeing Jim Nance and Troy Aikman or whoever else when I'm watching football or even, you know, when you talk about the hockey example. I mean, back in the day, you know, Don Cherry was a huge personality, but even he didn't get, you know, airtime during the play. So it's interesting.
Exactly.
So good point. So first off, I've always toyed with the idea of streaming after seeing the quality of the scoreboards and the overlays and the graphics. Dude, I'm done. You guys, all the streamers did a fantastic job with that. And for that, to Ray's point, didn't know what the score was, didn't know what the turn was. I found myself squinting at my phone trying to read that and went, okay, cool. Now I know what's going on. But in terms of play, I felt that, to your point, Jim, absolutely. There was this constant stream of consciousness from the shoutcasters, but not always about the game. Posing questions in chat and answering questions, everything from, you know, what armies are you working on and all stuff like that. I was like, can someone tell me, are we still in the movement phase? Did he move to the psychic phase? One game I was watching, it was TJ Lanigan's list with the Bash Brothers. And they were talking about something else, and all of a sudden, you know, they're like, oh, we need to get confirmation. They seem to be picking up Mortarion. I was like, I think that would have been a pivotal part of the game to know that Mortarion was under attack, had only 4 wounds left, and then was removed from the table. And they didn't know it until they actually picked up the model. And I was like, oh, come on. So, and then the visuals were... I'm trying to be careful with this, how I phrase this. The mats look awesome. The terrain looked really good in terms of, you know, quality and design, but it was almost too much. There's some games I had trouble trying to find the models. Like, and then they would go to Super Zoom and they had the cool boom with the cell phone type thing. So you didn't have any Blair Witch effects going on. But then the zoom was so close, it was like, well, the model's really well painted, and that's a cool glamour shot. I still don't know what's going on. Why is John Lennon moving those guys off one objective to the other objective? Well, they're going behind cover, but he's trying to hide from which unit now? I'm trying to learn. And I missed it. So maybe I'm just oblivious to what's going on the stream. I think I didn't even think of going to the native stream to listen to the players talk. That would have made a lot more sense. But it was a commendable effort. But I think some work needs to be done for the next season.
Yeah, and like let me be really clear. Like, I know they pulled this together, this whole Las Vegas Open thing, together really last minute. It was for a great cause. Like, I don't want to take anything away from like the organizers or the whole event. I'm just saying specifically regarding to the stream coverage. When I watch 40K on stream, or when I watch sports. Generally, it's because I can follow a sport when it's with no sound. Like, you can follow a sport with no sound. You can watch hockey with no sound. You can watch football with no sound. And generally, you're going to get what's happening just because of the visualization of the action. You cannot do that with 40K. 40K is a game that there's so many things happening. There's so many complexities happening. There's dice being rolled off screen, on screen. You need to know what is happening in order for it to have any sort of, like, for there to be any point in watching it. And oftentimes the reason I watch professional 40K or stream 40K, it's not because it's riveting, the riveting hits and like to see people move models. It's because I want to learn about the game. I want to learn what are the thought processes in the competitive players? Why are they making certain decisions? Why are they moving things in certain areas? Understanding how they're doing things. And so when you don't get to hear those players talk through what they're doing and try to understand that, it really kind of takes away the reason that you would even watch a stream game, which is to learn something from it. And oftentimes the commentators, because obviously, again, they're remote, it's one thing when you're in the room commentating. These guys are obviously halfway across the world from each other, Adam being Australia and Paul, I think he's in Atlanta, right? So it's not like they could ask the players, hey guys, like what just happened there? Can you give us like a little bit of an explanation? So it was just a little bit too much, but anyways, I could go on about it, and I'm not saying I could do better, but that's just my thoughts. Overall, though, I mean, I'm glad we just got to watch 40K. It got me really hyped.
Got me hyped as well, in case you missed it. The final championship game, which was an unlikely pairing, it was an Imperium Suplice featuring Adeptus Custodes with Sisters of Battle in the final. I forgot who originated the list, but I'll look that up in a second. And commanded by John Lennon, went up against Nick Donavati, who was actually playing JT McDowell's Drukhari list. So JT McDowell, if those of you don't know him, he is probably the only other Drukhari player other than Skari that anyone can name. So he's actually done quite well for himself over the years. It just kind of gets overshadowed by Skari's more public persona. But surprise, surprise. And no, the Drukhari Codex did not drop in between. This is still the old codex with the horrendous FAQ that just neutered everything that's in Psychic Awakenings. And he also did not use any of the crazy FAQ point values. He's kind of stuck to his old list of Venom Spam with Reapers with Dark Technology. And very interesting games all the way through. And the Imperial Soup ended up taking it. So very interesting. I did catch one of the other games. It was, I guess, a Tabletop Titans game that got him into that. So so I promise a lightning round here. Some quick questions from what I saw in there. Agents of Vect, still the most powerful stratagem in the game. True or false?
Agents of Vect?
Yeah.
I think it's lost a bit of its panache. Is that the word?
That's a good word.
Just because I feel like a lot of the new codexes, they don't have... I think they've really toned down a lot of the like game-winning stratagems. And the feel bad stratagems I've noticed in Necrons and Space Marines. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about Dark Angels later, but even Death Guard, you know, a lot of their stratagems are fairly like milquetoast. Like, it's like, oh, plus one to hit, plus one to wound. Like, nothing really like, you know, totally earth shattering, I guess. So we'll see.
Right. What about you think?
I don't know. Honestly, I'm unsure.
I think Jim hit a cool point, and I think there's a lot of armies that were crutches on a key stratagem going off at the right time. And the newer books have a stronger core, and the stratagems are just augmenting the core. The reason why I bring it up, it was a critical moment in the semifinals. The Tabletop Titans. So Drakari was facing up against another Sisters of Battle, and the plan was they're going to move a unit of Sister Repentia off an objective, and then they're going to advance and then use a stratagem to charge after they had advanced. And then there were, of course, Sisters of Repentia pretty much will dice anything, but of course, pretty much everything in the Drakari Codex is toughness 3. So they just did not stand a chance of holding that center objective. The way the stratagem reads is you play that in the charge phase. Did you advance? Okay, now you can charge. He vected that on turn 5. So now the Sister Repentia are literally standing in nowhere's land with nowhere to go. Right. And so, of course, you know, you can make a lot of criticism. Why didn't he back up that objective with another unit from his backfield? And so basically he gave up an objective to take the center objective. Stratagem cost him both objectives. So
sounds like he got outplayed.
It sounds like, yeah, absolutely. And that cost him.
Was there assault or?
That I couldn't tell because, again, I couldn't hear the players themselves talking. And they were not their usual jovial animated selves from other Table Titans videos. So, but the difference was it was a 15-point swing and for the Drakari player. And he came back from behind and won the game on that final turn.
I have a feeling, and I really hope that within the Dark Elder book that stratagem doesn't exist.
I wouldn't be surprised if it goes away. I would not be surprised. A couple other things, but that's a talk for another time. Other observations from the other games. I also saw interesting one. It was a preliminary game, and I was able to hear the players talk as well. But good old Archon Skari was going up against, I forgot the gentleman's name, playing a Tyranid list with several of the big bugs. And
Dustin. Yes. Dustin Henshaw. They're both on Team Canada.
Okay. So what makes this game interesting, not just because it's Drakari, neither player scored a single point on primary until turn 4. It was just a very interesting play to see when you hear so many people talk about lists these days, it's that whole, my army will do this and do that, and you can't stop it. Well, both these players are like, oh, yes, I can. I'm going to stop you from doing this. Oh, yeah, I'm going to stop you from doing that. And it was very entertaining to watch. I learned a lot from that game, and that's what got me so excited for the weekend and probably explains my rant for the rest of why the coverage was a little disappointing.
Yeah, there's definitely the games change a lot, and I played my first game of Tabletop Simulator against Skari, actually, yesterday, and I learned two things: that A, I'm very out of practice, and B, the Tabletop Simulator interface totally blows, and it's awful. But what it did do, playing the game of Tabletop Simulator, it made me remember how much I miss playing Warhammer, and it made me like really hyped to play Warhammer again, because that's the second game of Ninth I've played ever, and the first game I've played since basically Ninth dropped, and my only other game of Ninth was like a small, just like skirmish game to play, try out the rules. So just being able to play a game, move models around, albeit digital ones, was really exciting.
It is. It's, you forget how much fun the game is until you actually play it again. So last question regarding this Las Vegas Open. Trend I saw, Ray and I talked about the scores during last week's episode of the Adelaide Cup there. I believe Matt Morsoli scored something like average 97 points throughout his 6 games or something ridiculous like that. Not the scores we saw during this event. So, for example, lots of 60s and 70s, you know, some of them are even lower than that. So is that a sign of competition, or are people just learning to play the game differently?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, so Matt Morisoli came in first. I think Liam Hackett, who came in second with Chaos, he actually got, like, I think he was out of like 800 points. I think he missed like 45 or something like that, like something outrageous like that. Now, those two players are two of the best players in Australia, hands down. They're both, I believe, on the Australian like world team. And so in that kind of situation, you get, you know, they're going to have probably in that whole event, they're probably going to have, and this was an, I love the Australians. They're mental. It was an eight game event, which is absolutely bonkers and absolutely amazing. And I wish we had that here, but they love their eight game tournaments. So it was an eight game tournament. And the reason I think they do that is because they always like to, they don't like anyone winning unless they're completely undefeated. So the thing with that is, like, even in that eight game event, I bet you Matt Morisoli probably played two really hard games, one game that was like slightly harder, and then five games that were like not that difficult for him. Whereas in the Las Vegas Open, like every player that was playing on stream, we're talking our like tournament winning major players against each other. So like every game is basically a top table game at an event. So for the most part, not in every game, obviously, but for the most part. So I think what that does is you start to see where kind of when mountains collide, kind of what happens as far as scores are concerned. You know, there's a lot more of those close games and lower scoring games.
Yeah, it was just interesting to watch as I was watching those games. And you know, we talked about this. You know, don't plan on maxing out your secondaries. And I was like, really? Every time we report on scores, 97, 94. And then, but this weekend, got to see that on full display. And it wasn't due to, they said, mistakes. It was just strong counterplay and making decisions, which is the better play at this point. I can't get both of them. I got to do one or the other. So it was very interesting to watch. Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use a unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom. All right, as promised, we are all things competitive in the world of 40K, and the Las Vegas Open was not the only event going on in the world. A couple areas where, I guess, COVID is, according to our local news, everywhere in the world has a better COVID response than the state of Arizona. Once again, state 48, number one in the world in per capita cases. Awesome. So we'll be seeing a local event here anytime soon.
It makes you feel better. Our prime minister basically just put a full flight lockdown on the entire country.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, you can't even you have to, like, they canceled all flights to any basically leaving the country because too many people like me were going to Mexico. So they canceled all flights to some destinations and like a bunch of other places. And now if you come back, you have to, like, you already had to get a test in quarantine for 2 weeks, and now you have to get a test before you fly your plane and after you land, and quarantine for 3 days until you get results, and then quarantine for 14 days.
Oh, wow.
So it's gotten even, like, yeah, it's gotten even more psychotic.
My goodness. Wow.
Welcome to the land of the free, home of the brave.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I'll give you an idea. Latest numbers here locally, 400,000 Arizonans have tested positive. It's the highest rate per 100,000 in the world right now. And of anyone who gets tested, there's a 1 in 5 chance you will come up positive right now. Our positivity rate is 20%. So it's pretty insane.
Have you guys been in full lockdown like us for...
No.
Because we have been, so it doesn't feel like it's helping here.
I think we were in lockdown for about 3 weeks during the summer. And then they reopened and the numbers ramped right back up. And we'll try and steer away from the political conversation at this point, but there's a definite lack of direction in terms of where the state needs to do and in enforcing it. So which is causing this to not go down anytime soon. So I think everybody's hopes and prayers are that the vaccine will make it go away.
Yeah, that was our hopes and prayers until basically they said that they ran out of vaccine and... like Europe has now put basically they've implemented a ban on exports unless Europe is taken care of first. So just trying to get vaccines next to all.
Yeah. So, I'm supposed to get mine Wednesday, along with the rest of my team that I work with and all our residents. So I'm excited for that. So deep breath. I'm not a big fan of shots, but we'll make it happen. So, all right.
Anyways,
a little divergent there in our coverage here, but that's what's going on. So, yes. So anyway, our first event brings us to Hobart, Tasmania in Australia for the Hobart GT.
Hobart. That's awesome.
That's a great name. I wonder if they're is that where the Hobart, all the kitchen equipment comes
mixers?
From?
Yeah, I don't know. No, I'm really curious because.
So while you're looking that up, I'll rattle off your top five. Fifth place was Liam Hogwood, with Adeptus Sororitas. Fourth place, Henry Crosswell with Adeptus Sororitas. Charles Williams decided to break the trend, bring Space Wolves. Second place was Marzia's Ryback with Raven Guard. And in first place was Lance Glover with Space Wolves. Space Wolves. And not too often you see Space Wolves at the top of the pile there. Pretty cool. He was the only undefeated player on the day. And
how many games was the event?
Five games. And hold on. Looks like it may have been a brack. Nope. I'm just being stupid. There we go. I can read. It looked like it was a broken off. But your wooden spoon for that event was Matt Van Ruging with Necrons. So playing five games, he was able to pull off one win. Matter of fact, one game, he only managed his second round. He only managed 14 points.
So. Well, that's more wins in 9th edition than I've had. So
you and me both. Now we bring ourselves back to the States in Wichita, Kansas for the, surprise, surprise, Wizards GT.
Wow, the original.
Yep. So let's see if there's originality in the top five. And there is, actually. Fifth place, Connor McCormick with Eldari coming in fifth place. Sean Dilly with Death Guard coming in fourth. Ben Cherwin making a last-minute ditch to get to the top of the ITC, coming in third with Black Templars. Dan Sammons extending his lead on the ITC, coming in second with Orcs. And in first place was Aaron Cook with Adeptus Custodes, the only player going 5-0 on the event, a five-round event. And congratulations also to Mike Keyes with Cult Mechanicus. You, sir, are the Wooden Spoon winner, going 0-5 on the night. And I actually feel bad.
Speaking of that, go ahead, sorry.
I was saying, I felt bad for him because he scored 70 points in his first game and lost. And that's a rough way to start the tournament.
So what was the final on that one?
So he finished let me find out. Dun, dun, dun. He played Charles Fox in the first round. Sounds like a cartoon character. Sorry, Charles. Hangs out with Franklin the Turtle. Hang on. Pairings, round one. What did we do without all this technology in the past? There he is. Actually, he lost 72-70. So that's a tough pill to swallow there. Sorry about that, Mike. And just went downhill from there. Scoring 30 points in his next game, 61 in round three, then 24 and 25 in the final game. Charles Fox only finished three places ahead of him, by the way.
All right, so it wasn't because he got well deserved, I guess.
Exactly. This was best. It was a close fight to the end there for that wooden spoon. Other notables at this game, Tyler DeVries, not his best outing. He brought Adeptus Sororitas, won his first game handily with 92 points, and then went a perfect 0-4 for the rest of the weekend. That would be it from your top players from that event.
I was going to say, speaking of top of the ITC, did you guys hear about that craziness going on in Australia with like the fake tournament?
Yeah.
Yep.
I was like, that's so desperate, man. Like, come on. Like, the most meaningless event a year of ITC. Why would you go through all that effort?
Yeah. So, I did see it. All I can say is I commend the regional for doing as much work as he did to uncover it.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
I just think it's sad. Sad state of affairs.
Do you want to summarize it for our listeners in case they hadn't heard about it?
Yeah, the cliff notes from what I understand is a TO in a very small area of Australia with a large amount of indigenous people basically fabricated an event by creating 50 fake players with like really like bizarre, I guess, names of like local people, and then tried to pass it off as a legitimate event, even though none of the players had ever played a game in ITC before. No one knew any of the players in the event. It raised a lot of suspicions, and sure enough, it was
phony baloney. So it's not worth it, guys. Another event to talk about was in Murrieta. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Murrieta, California. The OBSEC Gaming presents, not the Las Vegas Open. Kind of a who's who of top players for this one particular event. Your top five looks something like this. And Thunderbunk with Harlequins coming in fifth. Jordan Roach, fourth place. Friend of the show, James Carmona, coming in third with Chaos Space Marines. Matt Geyer coming in second with Salamanders. And for Team Zero Comp, Junior Affle... I can always mess this guy's last name up. Junior Aflahi with Blood Angels coming in top spot. Yep. Interesting enough, everyone in the top four went 4-1, but Junior managed to rack off 415 victory points to take the top spot.
Good for Junior. Congratulations. He's a great opponent, I thought. Yeah.
I've only met him once. I've never played against him, so always curious how he was. And he's a nice guy. I'm surprised James made it back to California because he's living in Boston these days.
Yeah, wasn't he living out of a trailer?
That I don't know. That'd be unlike him.
I understand he's like... I could be wrong.
I'll tell you, Boston's not a town you want to be in a trailer in. That's especially if they're getting slammed with all kinds of snow right now. So there you go. That is your ITC wrapping up the 2020 season, the season that, I don't know, does it count? I don't know. But
the lost season.
Yeah, it was pretty much a lost season. But as of this moment, so I'm going to hit refresh one more time. And, of course, there's some late-breaking scores there. Actually, I'm going to click on Dan Sammons and see if this weekend's action is added into his total. They're pretty good about that. It is. So these are pretty up to date as we speak. So the only other changes we're expecting is anybody has a late breaking event from like 6 months ago, they're trying to plead Pesco's pairings to include. So your IC top 10, the final standings for the 2020 season are as follows. 10th place, Mike Porter from Liverpool at 1,038 points. 9th place, Johan Nicholson. 8th place, Rickard Nielsen. 7th place, from Goonhammer, Clyde Thompson. 6th place, Rude Steenbachers. Interesting, I did a little analysis on him. He probably played the toughest schedule of the top 10 here in the ITC. 5th place, Vic Vijay, who spent most of the quarantine at the top of the list. 4th place, as mentioned earlier, Ben Sherwin. He had to climb his way to 4th place with 1,066 points. 3rd place, Ken Knox. 2nd place, he was on the show a few weeks ago, Colin McDade. And in 1st place, as we mentioned, also in action this weekend, Dan Sammons is your ITC champion for 2020 with 1,170 points.
Cool. Congratulations, Dan.
Yeah, for congratulations.
For what it's worth, I guess.
You know, he played 6 events. Power to him. And hope all is well. So there you go. Top ITC teams. A very controversial topic, which we'll save for another episode. 5th place, the Outlanders. 4th place, Team Texas. 3rd place, Art of War. 2nd place, Glasshammer. And in 1st place, with 1,970 points, Dice Down. So I'm curious who is on that team. So your top scores from Dice Down include Vic Vijay, Conrad Barkowitz, George White, Malik Rubio, and Alex Petford are your top scorers on that team. So yeah, that's a murderer's row of players. I could see that being pretty powerful. So there you are. Log on to Frontline Gaming's website. You can also take a look at the top factions. Interesting, I guess, see how certain players did pretty well. Also interesting for 2021, the change to the Space Marine faction. Did you guys catch that by any chance?
I heard talk about it.
So what do you...
No, I did not.
All right, so... In the past, Dark Angels, separate codex. Blood Angels, separate codex. Not a separate codex anymore, you're a supplement. So therefore, they're all folded into the Space Marine category for ITC Championship, Best in Faction.
The correct call. Let all those Marines fight each other around.
That is the letter of the law, and that's how it's going to play out. So very interesting that it's going to be very contested in 2021.
I believe that ETC is following a similar, WTC.
That is correct. Neil Kerr was on with Adam Calilleri about a week ago and confirmed that. So yes, that means ITC team, if you're going to the ATC, they follow the same rules that only one player on your team may use a Space Marine. So no more.
Which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
For team. really, really pushes the variety of lists. And it's going to be interesting to see with the WTC this year. Like, I think almost every book with a codex will probably be a shoe-in. And then kind of figuring out of the non-codex books, who's kind of remaining. I'd imagine Sisters, they're still really strong. So outside of that, it's going to be hard to tell. So
I think Harlequins will still kick around by that point.
Assuming they don't get nerfed or anything like that. And it'll just depend on how the meta shifts, I guess.
That's the one thing. They seem to be FAQ proof at the moment.
They're good at killing Marines and power armor, and they're bloody fast.
Yes, they are. They're quite quick. All right, so that's
damn elves.
Anything else we missed this week? A lot going on this week.
Nope. I think. I'm not a. I just want to say I'm not a Age of Sigmar player, but I'm definitely picking up the new Warhammer core.
Didn't talk about too much. I talked about pretty much what I'm going to convert all those models to for 40K, but
I think that's the first time I've been like, I have to have this game for Age of Sigmar stuff.
You talk about the one with the Van Helsing demon hunter guy, the
vampire. Yeah, they're just.
It's an interesting aesthetic. It's not something I expected at all. Ray, what'd you think of it?
Well, it's very Warhammer Fantasy to me, which is why I love
it. It's neat. Yeah.
It's like what Warhammer Fantasy could have been if they had kept making models for it.
I still think that a lot of the really nice looking models have come because of the fact that they don't put everything in rank and file. Or if they would have, I don't know, redone the basing so that they could actually have more dynamic looking poses in the rank and file.
But yeah, I agree with you. I'm sure we could have a whole entire podcast on the failings of Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah, it's interesting how that came out. Yeah,
the failings and glory of Warhammer Fantasy.
But now the is it Underhive? Whatever, the new vampires.
Underhive.
Yeah, I'm definitely picking those up, and this could be my new Archon. So I'm excited for that. Excited for the new Lilith. Who am I kidding? I will pick up that box set. So if anybody wants the other half of the Sisters, let me know. Or I might just hang on to them and use them for Kill Team. I don't know. But we'll get lots of Kill Team previews this week. So stay tuned to the Warhammer community page. Very excited.
It'll be awesome.
All right. I think we covered enough for one glorious go. So glad to have the Triumvirate back again. And we'll be back next week. Of course, updates and breaking news throughout the week. You can find that on our Facebook page. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.